Usually.
There we go. Awesome.
And you might have to invite the transcriber back in. Yeah, you'll have to just click on Start CC or Start Captions, and that'll invite it back in. There we go.
All right. Awesome. Cool. Thank you all, and welcome to the Public Credentials good old CCG meeting for the week here. It is Tuesday, January 24th, just after 10 a.m. my time. Our main topic for today is covering FedCM. So Sam Gotu will be talking through that topic. So we'll be handing the ball over to him in a little bit here to talk about that, which I am sure many of us have interest in. Just a quick reminder that this meeting, as with all meetings and business with W3C, is covered under the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct. We typically don't have issues with that here, but I do like to call that out. I do also want to note from an intellectual property standpoint that anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you're actually contributing in any way, shape, or form to a CCG work item, you must be a member of the CCG with an IPR agreement signed. And it's pretty reasonably straightforward, and I'll put the link to join in if you are not a member. We are taking a recording of this, and it will be posted to our GitHub. We do also use the chat to queue. So in the chat, or if you're connected to the IRC bridge, you can just type Q followed by plus, and it will add you to the queue. The letter Q, that is, plus symbol, or the letter Q, the minus symbol, to remove yourself from the queue. We do try to keep things efficient here, so do be mindful that other folks may be queuing up. I think the hand raise function is still linked in nicely to queuing, so just so you know, if you do pop your hand up, I'm going to see it. Don't worry, I am moderating the chat, and we'll call on folks as we get to good natural breakpoints for questions. So with that, I am going to pause and just see if there's any introductions for anyone new to this call that has not been on this call today and would like to introduce themselves to the group, or folks that have changed affiliations or jobs and would like to let the community know. Pause here and... not seeing any. I will note that don't be shy if this is your first meeting. You can always, if you queue up, for instance, say, hey, first meeting here, and there's plenty of friendly people here that are happy to intro you to things you may or may not need to know about CCG. With that, any announcements or reminders from the community? Any kind of key topics folks should be aware of? Oh, and I do see an intro before we move into that. Brian, you want to speak up? We do see a new director of engineering for Transmute. You're welcome to come off mute and say hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, just want to say hello. This is obviously my first meeting. I started full-time work with Transmute this week, and yeah, I'm working hand in hand with Ori, and he asked me to come in here to try to get acclimated to the community.
Awesome. Well, great to have you, and I enjoy collaborating with Ori whenever I get the chance. So you're in good company, and I can say the same pretty much with everyone in the community here. So it's a good crowd. So great to have you, and looking forward to contributions over time as you get your feet under you here.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right. With that, any announcements from folks? Mr. Manu.
Thanks, Mike. Just real quick, a reminder that the Verifiable Credentials Working Group meeting is coming up in Miami in mid-February. So if you have not booked your tickets and stuff like that and you intended to go, reminder that it is you have to be a W3C member to attend, or you have to be invited in by the chairs, much in the way vampires work. So if you are coming, make sure that everything's kind of lined up. That's it.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks very much for that. And, if I can skip my wife's birthday for, that meeting, I am just going to put that as that should say the level of, relative importance as far as how I think that meeting's going to go. So I plan on being there. So would encourage anyone who is able to, join to do so. Any other announcements before we move into the main agenda for the day? Not seeing any. We are going to pass it over to Mr. Sam to talk about FedCM. I just put a link in the chat here to the slides that Manu thankfully sent out to the list here. So if you want to pull a copy of the slides, you are welcome to. And with that, Sam, over to you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here. Manu came to the FedIDCG a couple weeks ago, and it was just we just had a wonderful conversation there. And so it felt like it was a good time for me to do the reverse and come to meet you all and get to know you all. So I'm super excited about that. My name is Sam Gotu. I work at Google. I've been at Google for a long time. I worked with Manu in the past when I was in Google Search, doing standards for Google Search, with JSON-LD and crawling the web. And I know a bunch of stuff in this call too. So just wonderful to see a lot of you all, from, the years that I've been involved in, web standards. But for the last 6 years or so, I came to the Chrome team to do, web standards for browsers as opposed to search engines. So that's what brings me here today. So let me see if I can present and see if I can go from there. Let's see.
You are coming through. So
does this work?
Yep. You're all good.
Wonderful. All right. Okay. So, I meant this more as a kind of like open-ended conversation, more so the presentation. So feel free to, stop me and just kick off conversations as we go along. You know, the slides are just mostly just entry points for discussion, more so than, you know, a cohesive and coherent string of thought. And so please feel free to just stop me at any time and we can go from there. But if you don't, then there's probably content enough for me to talk over. So I figure, it may be useful for you all to get a sense of what FedCM is, in what context it was constructed, in what context it operates, just kind of like a brief introduction, you know, where it's at, but also kind of get a sense of, you know, why is it that we build it and where do we expect it to go? What opportunities are we excited about it? And so like a little bit of a sense of trajectory, And the reason I think trajectory is important is because I think you'll find that some of the things that we're excited about, I think, has an intersection with the things that this community is excited about. And so I try to build like a list of shared interests or things that we seem to be agreeing with each other or excited about too. Just so that we are realistic about things, also a list of things that we may be intention about. It isn't a long list, so but hopefully we can talk through these. So with that, then let me just get started. So four-part presentation. You know, what's FedCM, introduction about it, a bit of a where we expect it to go, and then how. I think there's an intersection with CHAPI and perhaps the places in which there isn't an intersection with CHAPI. Okay, so just a brief introduction about FedCM. Any questions so far? Anyone? Does this seem like a reasonable agenda? Okay.
Plus one.
Good. Yeah, feel free to ask questions in the chat. There are a few engineers, FedCM engineers on the call, and so they may be able to answer in the queue. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's FedCM? I guess most of you are all of you are very well versed in the space here. So Federation needs no introduction to you all, but just to contextualize things, Federation, at least for consumers, being one of the two ways in which you can create accounts with websites. You know, you can use usernames and passwords, or you can use Federation. And in using username and passwords, you typically these are backed by email verification or phone number verification. So at the core of like creating accounts on websites, you have only these two mechanisms. And while Federation has its challenges, we think it has benefits over usernames and passwords. So it felt like something worth preserving and maintaining on the web. Passkeys are evolving a lot too, and making usernames and passwords a lot better in many ways. And so this is a moving target, but in and on itself, we felt like Federation is something that's worth, that seemed like good for the web. The problem or the context in which FedCM is in is that, Federation, as you will find, Chapi 2, was designed unintentionally on what browser vendors call low-level primitives. These are things like iframes, third-party cookies, and redirects. These are low-level primitives because they're general purpose. They are general purpose primitives that can be used for a variety of things. And just by accident, one of the things that it's being used and abused by the ecosystem is cross-site tracking. So cross-site tracking has become a problem on the web, and it's likely the most active area of investigation for web browsers. Safari and Firefox and Chrome all pushing very hard on preventing tracking on the web. And the big problem is that we call this the classification problem, because as far as a web browser is concerned, it doesn't know the distinction between tracking versus reasonable uses of low-level primitives. We call this the classification problem, because browsers are having a hard time preventing tracking while maintaining and preserving the valid uses of these primitives, one of which being things like creating accounts on websites with third-party identity providers. And so you will see specifically in things like Chappy, for example, that uses these low-level primitives, you know, them being post-message, iframe, third-party cookies, and window pop-ups, the browser vendors are more and more trying to constrain and mitigate tracking, and in doing so, having an effect, unintended effect on valid use cases. So for Chappy specifically, in the absence of third-party cookies, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is just my interpretation and understanding of Chappy, so please do correct me if my interpretation is incorrect here. But much like other places in Federation, in the absence of third-party cookies, the protocols, they degrade gracefully. And by degrading, I mean that they lead to an user experience that is suboptimal. In this specific case, you know, Chappy opens a pop-up window as opposed to an iframe, because pop-up windows are loaded as first-party context as opposed to third-party context. And in doing so, it has access to first-party cookies. But in doing so, it also, it also exposes the user unnecessarily to offn.io, which is a mediator, but it's mostly something that is to be kept outside of what the user needs to know. But because pop-up windows do take, attribution in the page, that's something that the user is exposed. So not only from a kind of like user experience perspective, but also like the pop-up window per se is probably more disruptive than an iframe. By gracefully, I mean that while it degrades, it kind of still works. It's not like it's the end of the world. It partially works. And so this is Chappy specifically. Federation, OpenID Connect, and SAML specifically, also degrade gracefully, and for the most part also work, but break enough that it's worth looking into and providing alternatives to third-party cookies that would you know, perhaps make this process a little bit better. So that's the context in which FedCM is in. The context in which FedCM is in is that browser vendors are making interventions on third-party cookies and cross-site communication. And in doing so, it's causing pain for deployment of federation. And so what FedCM is it's a high-level identity-specific browser API. So it's a browser API, but it's one that makes a trade-off between extensibility and control. So it's not as expressive as third-party cookies and iframes and post-message. It's less expressive than that. But it's because it's able to narrow the language and expressivity, it's able to offer the user more control. And so FedCM is a web platform API. So think of it as an alternative to, you know, third-party cookies or post message. We have always thought of FedCM as kind of like this two-step play, meaning that, you know, it's first and foremost a preservation play, you know, meaning that there are things in the ecosystem that exist that should be preserved and we don't want it to break. And so OpenID Connect and SAML specifically, there are parts of it, you know, where you have billions of users using it, like front channel logout or other things that, you know, these are things that are worth preserving because we don't want to steer users towards usernames and passwords. Especially acquiring global email addresses. So there's much to be preserved here. But then we always thought that in the process of preservation, in the process of making it so that we're not breaking the things that exist, it would be good to make it so that, you know, once we take that step, it allows us to do things that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. You know, Federation has a massive amount of problems, and we thought that maybe by introducing the browser as a neutral intermediator, then maybe it would enable things to be done that wasn't possible before. So the most concrete example is the NASCAR flag problem. The NASCAR flag problem, which you're all very familiar with because Chappie, you know, it's it's a problem that requires a neutral intermediator. You know, in your case, you've invented offend.io, but in FedCM, we've constructed that in the browser itself so that you don't have to introduce a new origin. But it can only be done, right? Because you have this neutral party that allows, identity providers, to coordinate with each other. So that's a bit abstract. So let me turn that into something concrete. So this is precisely concretely what FedCM is actually in production today if you try it. So if you went to Chrome Stable, right? If you're using Chrome or a variant of Chrome, then it's likely that you will start seeing some of these account chooser widgets that allows you to log into websites with your identity provider accounts. In this specific case, recipewebsite.com being the reliant party, and google.com being the identity provider. But here you see kind of like a browser-mediated UI coming from the bottom, you know, suggesting your Google accounts to log in to Recipe website, and you can pick one of them. And it looks like an account chooser, it partially is. And it's constructed in such a way that the identity provider doesn't learn about the user going to Recipe website up until the point in which the user clicks continue as Eliza. Meaning that it cannot be abused to track users over the web. This is what it looks like on desktop. So you know, it doesn't take a lot of imagination. You know, it looks like an account chooser coming up from the top. This is what it looks like in production. So we ran experiments and production experiments with actual websites. Here you see Pinterest in Canada. And google.com in production, but this is what the user experience is more or less like, and this is what you're going to start seeing as Google sign in and Pinterest and all the websites start rolling up. We expect that to be done in the next year or so in preparation for the deprecation of third-party cookies, but you know, it looks more or less like an account chooser that pops up from the bottom or from the top right, and then you pick in one of those accounts. You are able to sign in to Pinterest. Do I have you all so far? Any questions?
Very much so.
I'm not seeing anyone on the queue, but I did have a question. I was just about to queue myself to ask. You know, one of the things you mentioned around privacy preserving was like, oh, and then they don't know who you are until you click continue, right? Do you have a mechanism to cover cases where you may want to just signify that the user was, say, of age or authenticated or some other flag without revealing any other information? Because this is something that's come up with, like, I'm thinking of, like, state of Louisiana legislation recently in some other areas. Are you looking at those use cases as well? Or is it primarily to authenticate and actually attach to a user profile, for instance?
Oh, that's a perfect segue to the next few slides.
Excellent. Yeah, that's,
so let me save that answer to the next few slides. Sorry, did I get that? Perhaps Dave had a question. Oh, just following along. Okay, should I just continue? Okay. Okay, so yeah, that's well, I'm glad that I've connected the slides in a good way then, because that will precisely give us that's precisely what I will go over forwards. So perhaps the first observation to be made here in terms of trajectory is that we think of FedCM, we used to call this Web ID, and internally to a large extent we still call this Web Identity. But we think of Web Identity as a thing that is orthogonal to authentication. And we like that there are two APIs that have that do what their names say that they do. Meaning that we have WebAuthn, who is just making wonderful progress towards authenticating users to the web in an extremely privacy-preserving way, in an extremely safe way, with passkeys and public-private crypto, right? And so we are seeing it's just that WebAuthn wasn't up until now as recoverable as Federation. And so Federation bundled both on identification as well as authentication. So it is the case that Federation today is used for signing into websites, but if I had to make a projection, I would expect a lot of the signing into websites with Federation to move towards more secure and private mechanisms such as passkeys. So we are working really hard, and this is, I'm not a direct contributor to WebAuthn, but I'm within the group that is. But we, I can say collectively, like, we're working really hard as browser vendors to make WebAuthn extremely successful, right? It has all the right properties when it comes to authentication, and creating accounts with websites, meaning, you know, like, it discloses as little as possible from the user, right? It doesn't share the user's email or global identifiers. You know, the private keys are directed, you know, public key cryptography is much better than most things combined. And it's, the user experience is seamless and wonderful because it's proportional to the amount of risk that the user is taking, right? And so, the first separation perhaps to be made, which I think is useful, is to know that from a projection perspective, we expect and want WebAuthn succeed in allowing users to create accounts with websites. And we expect, Web Identity to deal with your identity. And so just that separation, we expect it to be important as we go along. It's a bit too abstract, so let me try to make this into a little bit more concrete. So first, right, like you creating usernames and passwords, it's always predicated on something as recoverable as an email address verification or phone number verification. I'm also the editor for WebOTP that does verification of phone numbers and email addresses. We expect FedCM to be something that allows you to express yourself in many different ways. So obviously Federation is much larger than Google itself, as you all know. Google is probably actually the second or third identity provider. So, you know, we're working hard to make it so that identity providers like Facebook and Twitter and Apple, you know, see value in FedCM and find ways to have their users represented in such a way that they can take their their accounts, their Facebook and their Twitter and their Apple accounts into websites. You know, we constructed FedCM such that it's not bound to Google as an identity provider, because we know that the federation is much larger than Google. And we think that one of the things that we're excited about, which I think has a big connection with Chappie, is that, you know, there's a reason why there's a NASCAR flag, right? The reason why there's a NASCAR flag is because, you know, not all users are Facebook users. Not all users are Google users. You know, some users have presented themselves in one way or another, and choice here, I think, is a good thing to have, right? But the NASCAR flag has become unsustainable because only so many identity providers can be shown in a 4 or 5 row of buttons. But if we predicate the NASCAR flag over accounts that you're logged into or that you use as an identity provider, then that NASCAR flag can be much larger, almost like an infinite shelf like Amazon's Play, where you can have smaller identity providers show up in this list just because users are logged into them, so that smaller identity providers can be in this list because it won't be on the way of all the users, just the users of that specific identity providers. So once you make all identity providers kind of like conform and have a uniform interface, then it means that you can aggregate them in ways that you weren't able before, right? And this is what we mean about preserving federation, but doing so in a way that can put you in a place that you wouldn't be able to reach before, right? So just because you can make the identity providers conform to a uniform interface, it means that you can aggregate over them. And that might give you the ability to do, we've been calling this the multiple identity provider account chooser, meaning that it's an account chooser that can aggregate over all your identities. So, you know, just from a industry, from a ecosystem perspective, I talked a lot about these social widget like use cases, which are largely OpenID. But there's a massive amount of deployment of SAML on the web for students that use their student IDs to access university academic resources. You know, if you are a student, then you likely have your MIT or your Stanford identity. And because of that, you're able to access things like academic journals, for example. So SAML, also parts of SAML also breaks or degrades gracefully in the absence of third-party cookies, and is expected to break more as browser vendors are making bigger impositions over tracking. And so we're working with the SAML community to find ways to move them away from these general purpose primitives that are being under attack, and move them towards a place in which it's a more identity specific place, you know, having the browser know more about the user's identity card, such that this can be less prone to identity mitigations. So SAML, just take SAML as an important aspect of FedCM's work. We're also finding that a lot of people have been using OpenID and OAuth to enable things that we've been calling this membership identity cards, because the act here isn't so much to log into publishers, but it's to just prove, just to bring your membership card such that you can unlock something. Before the recent changes to Twitter, Twitter had this Twitter Blue product that, as a Twitter Blue subscriber, you were able to unlock ads on publishers because you're a Twitter Blue subscriber, right? And it relied on third-party cookies. But the act here isn't so much to log into the Atlantic. The act here is to use your Twitter Blue account on the Atlantic such that you can have an ad-free experience, Right. So it's more of a kind of like I'm a member of a club kind of thing, more so than necessarily that the user identity is being exchanged to the Atlantic, which is similar to the SAML proposition in that you just want to unlock content as opposed to sign in. Okay, now a bit about the sense of attributes beyond identity or things along the lines of driver's license and so on. It's the case that, right, it's the case that both OpenID and OAuth allow you to be expressive about the things that are exchanged between reliant parties and identity providers, right? So OAuth with OAuth scopes and OpenID with the claims attributes, you're able to say as a reliant party, you know, I want only this many things from the identity provider. And this is extremely useful to us, we think, because we want to minimize data as much as possible. Right now, FedSAM is very constrained in that it's always exchanging this 4 bits of information, the user's name, email address, profile picture, and user ID. And we want to make it so that you can construct things such that the website can ask for fewer things, right? Maybe they don't need the user's email address in order to continue. Or even perhaps more things, like maybe they don't need the user's email address, but they like the user's phone number, right? All the way to things like perhaps just getting the user's age as opposed to the user's email address. So there's a stream of investigation which is looking into selectively being able to disclose as little information as necessary for you to get your job done. Mike, does this more or less, this is where
it was, and we've got a little bit of a queue stacking up. Are you okay for some questions here?
If you don't mind, let me just finish the section and then I can stop at the section, at the break of the section, because I think I only have a couple more slides.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. So just to wrap up, just a couple more slides in this section here, but one of the browser mediated APIs have their flaws. You know, you're always, it's the accessibility manifesto, challenge. You know, the trade-off between low level primitives and high level primitives is a trade-off between accessibility, expressivity, and control. But so we are, aware that, you know, FedSAM will always be behind in terms of what it can express in comparison to HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. But the trade-off that we take allows us to, because we take identity as a first-class citizen, right, then we can use that information in places that would otherwise not be accessible typically to content. And so, for example, the Omnibox, the URL bar is something that is protected as browser-mediated UX. But because this is an identity-specific flow, then we can construct UX that is otherwise not available to content. Some of the explorations that I like the most is to take identity and login status as a first-class citizen, right, into much like you have a login status indicator to your Chrome profile. Some of the explorations that I'm most excited about is taking login status to the site as a first-class citizen. If you think about it, the web was constructed such that logging in is a user land construct, right? The browser doesn't know if you're logged in to a website or not, because cookies can express a variety of things. So with this, we would be able to provide user experiences that would otherwise not be possible. Another example of UI that is otherwise inaccessible to content, that once you constrain it such that it can be constrained, then it can be made accessible, is autocomplete, right? Autocomplete is a browser-mediated UX that only browsers have control over. And by browsers, I mean all the way the user's tech, right? Browser vendors and operating system vendors, all the way to hardware vendors. But this vertical stack that is operating on the user's behalf only gives access to these things in a way that is very narrow. So here's one example where, I feel the pain of email verification and phone number verification. So I always come back to this use case. But here's one way in which perhaps you can have an email provider, for example, make assertions, verified assertions about email addresses, for example, or maybe phone carriers can make verified assertions over phone numbers too. And in doing so, perhaps, having the user skip a few steps as they're constructing their accounts. All right. Perfect. This is a good break. Let's look at the queue.
Awesome. Sounds good. I think Ryan Grant is up first.
Okay. That is correct. This is an accessibility plea in support of include and exclude lists for turning this technology on and off per website. And to relate a story, I have a friend with severe visual impairment who also protects their personally identifying information carefully and offers generally very little trust to most websites. This friend is a big fan of Little Snitch. So they've previously related to me that they are always terrified that they will accidentally offer their identity to a website that they would prefer to not trust in any way because of the way that these requests pop up. And I have also personally now noticed that I'm declining these dialogues multiple times per day due to the way I reset my PII when I engage with websites, or I'm kind of directed there from elsewhere, but I have no intention to share my identity with this website. And so I am also trying not to click that button and looking for the little button over in the corner to get away from sharing with somebody I don't want to share with. And I feel I'm being nudged in the wrong way. So my question is, to restate it, what accessibility affordances, such as an include and exclude list, are being considered to help users like my friend and myself use the web as we'd prefer to? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. Thanks for asking. I think in many ways, the user agent or the browser is closer to following your interests in comparison to identity providers. And so I would expect that as the user agent is able to intermediate the exchange between identity providers and reliant parties, it's able to better represent your needs and your interests in the form of, for example, browser settings, for example, that is able to disable this for all the websites, or perhaps make them less prominent in the UI, or perhaps have more control over them. So FedSIM right now does have some of these settings. I can't say that it probably won't meet your bar, but I think from a trajectory and direction perspective, it's architecturally speaking, it's easier to have the one intermediator control over all the identity providers, right, in representing your needs, than to have all the identity providers do that by themselves or through regulation. And so if I hear you, and I believe that from a direction perspective, we're going to be in a better place than we are with the status quo, having these things be done in user land as opposed to browser land. Does that answer your question?
I'm not sure that. I think you're saying having it done in user land instead of browser land will be better, but I certainly have not seen things get better, and I don't know where any of those related options are that I would need. So I don't see them right now.
Yeah. It was more of a trajectory and architectural argument than a snapshot argument. I think if you look at the ecosystem today, you'll be right that the controls that browser vendors and the FedCM is exposing aren't sufficient. But I just wanted to say that I think that architecturally, this is the better call because it would allow us to do so in a way that is more at scale than it was before. So
Thank you. I understand. Thank
yeah.
You.
And Sam, by the way, my wife, just as a random aside, works quite a bit with National Industries for the Blind, and they're one of the larger employers for folks with visual impairments. She herself is visually impaired. And I can tell you firsthand, when we, I would encourage the team to just sit down with folks that actually are using screen readers on a day-to-day basis, and what an engineer thinks is accessible versus what actually is something that gets overlooked a lot. And when we're talking about things as critical as identity, it's a pretty big deal. So, awesome topic. Happy to deep dive on accessibility and this stuff later. And Ryan, thank you very much for bringing that up. Ted, I see you on the queue.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I guess I'll just go with the first one first. This is about TLS sessions, which are currently bound to a browser instance. I can open up a TLS connection and authenticate with the opposite end, close my tabs, close my window, don't quit the browser, just close those items. And somebody else can come to that shared workstation, open a new window or tab, and they've got the same TLS session. And so they've got my permissions, etc. Currently, there's a way to sort of tell the browser to log in, and then over that TLS connection, authenticate as the actual user. We've sort of patched that together with tools at OpenLink Software. It is a kludge because the browsers don't have this stuff built in, and so we've had to do it by extension. The primary one is UID. I'm curious whether this has been taken into consideration or not at this point.
Probably not to the extent that you're suggesting. From a security threat model perspective, access to the device is taken as kind of like, you know, outside of the threat model, physical access to the device, I mean. I can't say that I'm a security expert. If you have built an extension, it means that there's something in the web platform that's missing that you need access to. So, we should certainly follow up, and I'd love to learn about what specifically you have built such that we can expose that on the web. Why don't we follow up and we can go from there?
Cool. Ted, is that good for our first one? And then we'll roll to Brent and then Beck. All right. Cool. Brent.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. My first one with FedCM, does the ID provider still see everywhere that the user logs in or uses the membership card?
Yes, that's correct. It does, but only after the user consents.
Cool.
So yes, that is, I want to say what I would call a compromise when it comes to backwards compatibility. We like a lot of the design that you have picked, decoupling holders from, issuers such that you can keep the issuers blind to the presentation. But it's not the case that OpenID and SAML operates that way today. So, we made that compromise in order to maintain backwards compatibility, but it's not a property that we like. And we're actively working on trying to raise the privacy bar there.
Thank you.
In this interest of time, I still have about a third of the deck to go through. Is it okay if I use the last 15 minutes to do that? Or is there anyone else?
I see you on the queue. Yeah. I think there's two additional questions. Can we roll Ted, then Brent?
This is about... it may have been just covered. I'm not sure I understood the answer to it. My concern is along the lines of being a member of the Rebel Alliance who's logging into a Galactic Empire site. And I want to use my Galactic Empire identity and not expose my Rebel Alliance membership. So this is partly a question of trusting that middleman. How distributed is this plan to be, or is it built to be decentralized and distributed, or is it confined to the browser vendors or that sort of thing?
We would have to get into the specifics for me to actually answer that question in a concrete and constructive way, but that we know that Federation is something that is much bigger than any single browser vendor, right? And so it is, we have constructed FedCM such that there's a path in which other browser vendors can use it too, like Firefox and Safari. But then in addition to that, we also know that you can log into a website, you can log into Netflix over your desktop and then go to your Android phone and use it too using Federation, right? And so we have constructed FedCM in such a way that we expect it to be something that is available not only across browser vendors, but also across operating systems. And so, so we expect it to be, you know, it's our desire for this to be pushed down into the stack all the way to operating systems such that Android, iOS, Windows, and Linux can be that intermediator too. So I don't know if that answers your questions, but we certainly
almost. It sounds like my personal laptop could serve as the mediator, which would allow me, I think, to be private, or at least that would be the place where both my Rebel Alliance and Empire membership cards could be stored, and I could choose clearly and not reveal to anybody else that I have those both membership cards.
That would be correct. Yeah. So if your laptop is a Linux machine, then yes, I would expect Linux to support this at some point. If your laptop is a Mac machine, then yes, I would expect Mac OS to support that at some point, as well as Windows. And it's going to be a long-term play, but yes, it's something that we're, much like WebAuthn, right? If you think about the WebAuthn play strategy, WebAuthn cannot succeed unless browser vendors and operating system vendors also support it. And so it just cannot succeed unless Linux supports WebAuthn and Windows does too and so on. So yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Brent.
All right, so you said that the browser knows which IDPs the user is logged into, which is cool. It solves that NASCAR problem. Does that mean the browser vendor also knows all of the different IDPs that the user has or is logged into, or is it a local thing?
Oh, so this will likely vary per browser vendor. But if you're logged out of your browser, then likely you're not storing that information back into the browser vendor's servers. In FedCM specifically today, I believe that if you're logged into Google into your browser, we don't send that information back to Google servers. So I think it's a local thing only. There are engineers on the call who are a lot more versed and smart than myself that can maybe confirm or deny this on the chat, but I believe that it. Yeah, so yes, EE is one of the engineers. But yes, I believe that the best of my knowledge, this is something that is kept locally as opposed to synchronized across your devices.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. We got about 10 minutes there. You want to fire in your interest? Because I think there's some great application points. So
yeah, this is likely the most interesting part, I guess, but it's also the least well-constructed one. So. Stay with me a bit of impromptu presentation here. But yeah, so let's just page back in memory. This is what we have in Chrome since 108, which was launched in November. So it's still like in its infancy, but this is what you have in production today that you can use right now if you wanted to. As I said, it sucks for a variety of reasons. So for one, you can only use one identity provider at a time, which kind of sucks. For two, like it has a lot of language here that is signing specific. You know, and so on. So, but I wanted to give you a sense of projection of the things that we're working on that I think we'll have the, like a connection with Choppy. So the first exercise that I went through with Dimitri at IAW, the last IAW, was to look at Choppy and FedCM and try to compare and contrast. We were both looking at this and like, they seem to be doing similar things here. You know, what are the commonalities? What are the differences here? And so first, you know, I think it's important to say that both Chappy and FedCM operate as an intermediator between entities, right? In the Chappy case, it's a wallet selector. In the FedCM case, it's an account selector. But both of them operates as a intermediary, as a neutral intermediator to the user. It's not an important detail, but I just wanted to say that architecturally speaking, Chappie implements this in userland over offn.io, which is to be trusted, whereas FedCM implements this in the browser. But I think that's just an implementation detail. I think Chappie was designed such that it could find its way to browser vendors at some point. And so it, what you see here is a neutral intermediator that constrains the use to specific things like choosing wallets or choosing accounts. It's also similar in many ways in that it connects, it intermediates two different things, two different entities. First, in the case of Chappie for issuance and for presentation, you have the issuer and the verifier, right? Saying like, I want to store this or I want to get this, right? And so, which is what FedCM would call a rely party, meaning that it's a website that wants the user's account, right? And then you also have in Chappie this selector of wallets that you have registered in the past of that you have access to, right? And in FedCM's formulation, this is what we call an identity provider, right? But if you look at the threat model here, right? Someone in Chappie said, we should show the origin of the website. We should show the origin of the issuer. So playground.chappie.io, that is not by mistake that it's there. Right? That is a critical thing. And then also demo.variouswallet.dev, it's also not by mistake that origin is over there, because that is the threat model that you have. I'll put aside the rest of the UX because I think it's easier to see the connection between the two. Now, these are the commonalities. Perhaps the differences are, like I said, some of the language here, right? So for one, Chappie is, you know, is presented to the user as a wallet selector, whereas FedCM is presented to the user as an account selector. In Chappie, you are able to have multiple wallets, whereas in FedCM, right now, you can only pick accounts from a single identity provider. Like I said, you have the wallet language, some of the UX choices. You know, one is a modal dialog, the other is a non-modal dialog. Chappie has a really interesting property of allowing wallets to be registered as opposed to announced, whereas FedCM still operates in a model in which the relying party has to announce which identity providers it wants to work with. Chappie can work with native apps, whereas FedCM only works with cloud providers. Okay, but those are the differences, but I wanted to give you a sense of the work that we're doing, because I think that as we finish that work, a lot of these differences are going to be decreasing. So for one, we're working on this thing called the Multiple Identity Provider API, which allows a website to say, I can take accounts from all these many different identity providers. So what you see here in the specific mock, it's very subtle, so apologies for just being hard to read here, but you see accounts coming from FedCM, that Chappie wallet, one.glitch.me, which is a different origin from webid.fedcm.glitch.me. Meaning that these are accounts coming from different origins, right? Just imagine these being Facebook and Google or Facebook and Twitter, right? But accounts coming from multiple identity providers. That's currently available behind a flag, and we expect to launch this as soon as we can. You see here a bit of a demo of what that looks like. It's probably hard to read, but this is one way in which you can have an identity provider in addition to Google as an identity provider embedded within the same UI dialog. So you see that this is the Google account and there was an account that was before. Okay, so with that, I think we cross out one of the differences that Chappie has multiple wallets and FedCM can have just now multiple identity providers. Another API that we've been working on is something that we call the RP Context API. And that is an API that allows relying parties to be more explicit about what context the FedCM UI prompt is being used. So like I said to you before, like with membership cards and getting access to journals and so on, you know, signing in isn't the action that the user is taking. And so RPs want the control to, you know, just use language that's more appropriate. And so right now we have four different options that we've implemented. You can have language which is use website with your identity provider, or continue to website with your identity provider in addition to signing in and signing up. So this gives RPs the ability to, just use different language in the dialogue. And I think with that, I think it's easy to kind of like incrementally add like a at wallet context, or, you know, a present credential kind of a thing where we can move away from a user experience from the language of identity providers and signing in to a language where you can connect with a wallet-like language. And with that, I think we cross all a bunch of differences too. I wanted to show you too, like a small prototype that we built for what we call the Identity Provider Registry API. But it's an API that looks a lot like if you ever used a Register Protocol Handler. It's a very similar API, but it's an API that allows an identity provider to register itself and to ask for the user's permission to be an identity provider. And in doing so, allows reliant parties to just ask for any registered provider as opposed to having to name them. So if you look at the developer console here, the API was called in a way that the providers weren't named and that you didn't call for Google as an identity provider or Facebook as an identity provider. It presupposes that you have registered identity providers. And that's really wonderful for a variety of reasons in that you can bring your own identity provider to the websites. But I think we'll see, once we do that, then it's isomorphic to wallet registration. Okay, so with that, then I think we can also do wallet registration. So if you remove then all the differences, then if you make a projection of what FitSim is going to be like in a few quarters, perhaps at the end of the year, then it's likely that we're going to find fewer of these differences between Chappie and FitSim, and so on. Okay, we only have a couple more minutes. So I just wanted to perhaps end with this slide perhaps, because I think it's perhaps the most concrete one to bring to this group here. So I just wanted to kind of like put it out there. Like FedCM competes with cross-origin tracking and third-party cookies and post message, not with Chappie per se. So I think what I'm imagining is more like a Chappie over FedCM, like Chappie using FedCM as opposed to third-party cookies, more so than FedCM in replacement of Chappie. And for to a large extent, it would be wonderful if we could make things backwards compatible. So what I'm imagining is more like trying to remove the awkward parts of Chappie being off.io and the user of third-party cookies, right? But maintain and exchange that to FedCM calls, but maintain backwards compatibility between wallets, issuers, and verifiers such that they don't have to know that change happened. Okay. I think I'm going to end here because I think I'm going to run out of time.
Yeah, sure. No, we're right at the top, and I think this is a great ending spot. Manu, I see you on the queue. I'll let you get probably the second to last word outside of my thanks. So,
great. Thanks. Yeah, just to add, thank you, Sam. That was fantastic. Thank you for going through all of that, and thank you for, you know, having the slides available so we can go back and review. This was fantastic. I think that the takeaway to the CCG or for the CCG is that, you know, there's active work on doing this kind of alignment. We don't know if it's going to work out yet, but it's headed in a great direction. As Sam demonstrated, we're trying to close the gap here and enable, you know, Chappie to have more native APIs that it can call and ideally get to this point where we have, you know, choice of IDP, choice of wallet selection, that kind of thing. Still quite a bit to go to get there, but I think it's great that the Chrome team, you know, and Sam has put together a plan on how we could possibly get there. So thank you, Sam, for coming and presenting again.
Yeah, no, this was excellent. Really, really appreciate the time. I think the $10,000 question is, you know, can we get kind of native detached verifiable credential support via FedCM in some capacity in the future? Obviously yet to be seen, but really, really appreciate the time. I think there's a huge amount of alignment and love the direction you guys are going. I think you're asking a lot of the right questions and just once again, really, really appreciate this. And just noting Anil's comments in the chat there, there's a lot of use cases, especially gov use cases for selection of wallets, right? Can the user select where they are storing things and what they're actually disclosing in more of that holder style model rather than the phone home model. So thanks again. And once again, just much appreciated. So.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Kill recording now.